Moncrief on News Talk
with Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
Jonathan de Burke Butler joins us once again to bring us stories from other parts of the world. Jonathan, good afternoon.
Sean, how are you doing?
Right, South Africa we're going to go to first. And one dead and two injured in an attack in a mosque.
In a mosque, yeah, in South Africa of all places. And it happened in a fairly small town to 30 kilometres north of Durban. Now, this place only, it's a kind of a curious place. As I said, it's about 30 kilometres north of Durban. Has a population only of about 60,000, but about 60% of the population there are of Indian or Asian extraction, okay? And there's a big Hindu population there of the 60,000. And there's also a small Muslim population. And in this particular town, it's called Valerum, there is a Shia mosque. And this was attacked on Thursday by three assailants who attacked an imam and a caretaker. They cut the throat of the imam. He is now fighting for his life at the moment. And unfortunately, a man who came to actually help out, a man by the name of Abbas Aesop, he was also attacked by the assailants, and he also had his throat cut, and he died subsequently of his injuries. We don't know yet who this was done by. All of the Islamic organisations within South Africa have come out and condemned the attack. It's very rare for South Africa for this to happen, and given that the population of the country is 55 million and about 2% of the population is Muslim, it's strange for this to happen in such an isolated place as well.
Yeah, and you said it was a Shia mosque. I mean, it might it be an inter-Muslim?
Well, look, that's thing. Some people are speculating that that might be it. They are saying that there has been some an increase in anti-Shia rhetoric online and, you know, over the last few years coming from various different places. And they say that there is some white supremacists, obviously, who have been voicing their opinions in that part of the world as well. So I would be speculating and people have been warning the press within South Africa
not
to do that. But it remains open. But I'll leave it at that.
It's a very strange story in a country that has so many other, I suppose, racial and economic and social tensions to worry about. Right, we'll go on to Somalia, where another grim one. A woman's been stoned to death.
Yeah, this is Al-Shabaab, who, although they are out of Mogadishu in Somalia, they do have control of some more rural areas of Somalia, and in those areas, in those villages, they've imposed their version of Sharia law, and this is something that we know happened because they kind of bragged about it. This came out on Wednesday through their radio, through their media organisation, where they spoke about the fact that they brought this 30-year-old woman into a court, inverted commas. Her name was Shukri Abdullahi, and she was accused of marrying 11 men in a row without divorcing any of them. Now, you know, if you're a man, you can marry four women, okay, in Somalia, depending on what part of the country it is, obviously. And there is, I believe, a tradition. I'm open to correction on this, but I believe there is a tradition in some parts of the country where women are also allowed to take on more husbands for whatever reason. It might be economic reasons,
okay.
But it's kind of part of the culture. But obviously, it doesn't fit in with what Al-Shabaab are trying to get across. And so they sentenced this woman to death, and they did so by stoning her to death. I don't need to go into the details of it. It's fairly grim.
Yeah, and has the sentence been carried out?
It has. Yeah, we know it has.
Right, Malaysia we're going to go to next, and a former Prime Minister is not going anywhere.
Yeah, he's not. This is a very interesting story. We'll start with who he is. The former Prime Minister Najib Razak, who was fully expected to return to power after elections last weekend. He's been there since, I think, about 2007 or 2008. And in 2008, he set up an investment company. Now, it was for the country to sort of attract foreign direct investment. It was called 1MDB State Fund, and investigations were launched against him in around about 2014-2015, not just in Malaysia but outside of Malaysia. In fact, he was able to kind of put a halt to those investigations within Malaysia given his position. So had he hung on in power, it would have been probably okay for him, but he lost these elections. And it's interesting because the person he lost to is a former prime minister who was Prime Minister from 1991 to 2003, a man by the name of Mahathir Mohamad. He had retired from politics in 2003, but he was so annoyed and aggrieved at these accusations against Prime Minister Najib that he came back into the election fray aged 92,
wow.
headed up a four-party coalition and won. He beat them out. It beat the National Front out the park, and it's the first time that this party has actually been out of power since independence was gained in Malaysia from Britain in 1957. Okay, so
crikey.
It was quite a victory. So one of the first things he did was that when former Prime Minister Najib was heading to the airport to go for a holiday, as he called it, with his wife to Indonesia, he held his passport and said, no, I think we'll keep you here and we'll have a closer look at these accusations against you. So interesting times in Malaysia, big changes there.
But no charges have been brought yet.
There are accusations, as far as I know, because he's been investigated in the United States as well. So I don't know if charges have been brought against him there.
Mm.
They might well have been, but I don't think so within Malaysia. I think he's probably managed to stop them. But it'll be interesting to see what happens. There's a raft of sort of cultural and political changes that this guy, is 92-year-old, is bringing in. Albeit during his tenure in the 90s, he wasn't exactly a great man for the civil rights and civil liberties and freedom of the press. But
know.
He seems to have had a turn of heart,
okay,
or a change of heart.
People always do when they see somebody else doing it. And does he have any other proposals apart from maybe locking up his predecessor?
Well, that would be the biggest one. But I think there's another. They do have sort of ethnic difficulties there in Malaysia as well, and he's appointed an ethnic Chinese as finance minister, and he'd be the first member of an ethnic minority to be appointed to that post in 44 years, I believe. So that's quite a move as
okay,
well.
Okay, and I suppose the symbolism of that is quite significant.
Yeah,
And presumably he's in fairly good nick. I know he's 92, but he was able to run an election campaign.
Yeah, he looks fairly healthy, all right.
Okay, all right, good for him. Right, we're going to go to India now, and a story about sanitary pads.
Yeah, a strange one. It's a state election that's actually the vote counting is on at the moment. It's happening in the southern state of Karnataka, which is a population of about 61 million. Now, it's important because there's elections next year in India, and this is sort of seen as a bellwether state to see how the ruling BJP party will do against the Congress party, which is of course the long-running party that was headed up by Mahatma Gandhi, I believe, for years. So it was interesting because they decided as part of their manifestos that they were going to remedy a situation that the BJP had actually brought in last year, which was imposing a 12% tax on sanitary products. Now, the BJP brought this in last July, okay, across India. And then in this election, they were proposing that they were going to get rid of it, right? The Congress party had said that within this state of Karnataka, they were going to promise free sanitary towels to women who hold below poverty line cards and female students. And then the BJP party followed that up, trumped it by saying, we're going to give sanitary pads to everyone.
Yeah.
Now, on the surface, this seems to be a great idea.
Yeah.
But it was criticised by some people because, you know, activists who basically said, well, look, on one side of it, last year you bring in this 12% tax and then your local government are saying, no, we'll get rid of it if you give us votes.
Yeah.
Now, it hasn't worked, it seems, for the BJP party. Congress look as if they're going to win in that particular state and go into a coalition with another party at the moment. But interesting tactic to try and get the mobilise the female vote, I suppose.
Yes. But can they come good on that? Because I presumably giving free sanitary tads to, I don't know how
61
many.
Million.
61
million.
Yeah,
whatever.
That's a lot of. Every month. That's a lot of money.
It would
could
be all right.
Could they possibly fund that anyway?
Yeah, it would be. But I know that it seems to have worked for another politician in an eastern state of Bihar who did this as well. And he seems to be very popular. So I suppose where there's a will, there's a way. And where there's a way, there's always money.
Yeah.
So I presume they would have been able to deliver on it.
Right, Mexico we're going to go to next. And a protest involving clowns, but one that isn't very funny.
Yes, not funny at all. It's actually happened in Acapulco, which people will remember from, is it the Billy Ocean song from the 1980s, Going Loco Down? And I can't remember, but anyway.
Yeah, that's an odd reference to Acapulco, but an odd way to remember it. But I'm sure there are others.
But I suppose what I'm trying to get across is that the positive image of Acapulco is kind of gone in the last number of years because the murder rate has skyrocketed. Now, actually, one of the reports that I read has said that this has really put a stop to tourism. People are afraid to come into the country, but I've seen that actually before I came in, I checked that, and the tourist numbers are actually up 7% in 2017. So it's interesting. But the clowns, anyway, they went out into the main street of Acapulco dressed in white, calling for peace and trying to get the gangs to stop their violence because they're losing business. They're saying that people are afraid to host parties because they feel they're going to be targeted at these, and so therefore they're not hiring clowns, and clowns are losing money.
But that's extraordinary, isn't it? But then again, at the same time, probably, and people may well have experienced, as you go to a place like Acapulco, you're kind of cloistered within the kind of resort part of it, and you don't see what's happening outside, and you may not even hear the gunfire. Right, Uzbekistan next. Wow, another a great move in for labour rights in Uzbekistan.
Yeah, it's a major move, in fact, in this part of the world. Uzbekistan is the fifth largest cotton producer in the world, okay, and it exports 60% of its raw cotton to China, Bangladesh, Turkey and other countries in the area. It earns them $1 billion in annual revenue, which equates to about 25% of GDP. So it's a big deal, okay? Now, over the years, when it came to cotton picking season, they used to mobilize basically everyone in the country to go out in the fields and do it. Now, that included school children, doctors, nurses, teachers, whoever, didn't matter. You had to get out and go out and do what you needed. And obviously, this was a problem for people who were buying the cotton. And so there was, for a few years, there was a few boycotts on the product, and, you know, companies who were buying their product were boycotted and the like. So in a clever move, the new Prime Minister, Shavkat Mirziyoyev, has decided to issue an edict stopping that particular practice. Now, he's been in power since September of 2016. He's a reformer. Islam Karimov was there before. He was there since the 90s. He's a bit of a reformer, and this is a big move in this part of the world for them.
So, and how is he, and as I understand it, because that practice dates from like the Stalinist era, where people would actually get shot if they didn't keep their cotton production to a certain level. So perhaps understandable. How does he propose to fill the labour gap, so to speak?
That's a good question. I don't know. I really don't know. I have no answer to that, Sean, actually.
Okay. Right, well, maybe he's hoping they'll volunteer in similar circumstances. Right, Colombia we're going to go to next, and another story about an ex-FARC leader. I suppose we'll be doing a few of these over the next few years.
We could be, all right. Yeah, absolutely. This is Jesus Santrich, who was a bigwig in FARC, as you say, and he was instrumental in the peace deal. The problem for him is that he's been accused by the US Drug Enforcement Administration of trying to export, or traffic, let's call it, 10 tons of cocaine into the US. Now, had he done this before November 2016, it would have been fine, probably, because everything that you did before the peace deal, including trafficking of cocaine, was forgiven. The problem was, I think he was trying to pull a fast one and do this after the peace deal. He's been arrested, and it looks like he's in Colombia, and it looks like he might be extradited to the US. And given the mood that the US are in at the moment, I think they're not going to give up on this lightly.
Yes.
So this is causing problems within Colombia, as you can imagine. There's pressure on the president there, Juan Manuel Santos, recently, who got the peace deal over the line, to, you know, give a pardon effectively, or to do something to stop the extradition. It'll be interesting to see what he does.
Yeah, he might require some massaging with the Indeed. US, mightn't be too keen on that. Right, finally, the UK we're going to go to. No more pencil cases.
No more pencil cases. This is in a school in St Wilfrid's Primary School in Northumberland. Pauline Johnson, the head teacher there, has said that they are banning pencil cases, to quote her, so there's no comparison on the tables and children are learning. So they were one of 100 schools that were involved in a study run by an NGO called Children Northeast, which was encouraging teachers and head teachers to look at ways of including people who didn't have as much money as everybody else. And one of the things that they decided to do was get rid of pencil cases that may or may not be more expensive than other pencil cases that were on the table.
Okay, over the next week, what should we look out for?
Okay, so two things really to look out for. Friday, Merkel, Angela Merkel is going to Russia to meet Vladimir Putin. Should be relatively interesting. And then on Sunday, big story, presidential elections in Venezuela. Everybody says that Maduro is going to win again, but what the army are going to do next is what we need to watch.
Yeah, that will be very interesting. Jonathan, thanks a million for coming in with Jonathan De Burke Butler there.
Moncrief on News Talk
with Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas